I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching the game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Welcome to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM Channel 94. I'm Simon Borg, joined by David Goss, who returns from his college basketball hiatus.
Yes.
And we lost someone else, I think, to college basketball. He won't admit it. He says it's jury duty. But Andrew Wiebe, the regular host, just came from a – he's not on the show because of, I think, a humiliating defeat by his Kansas team against Wichita State, which I believe is embarrassing, although Andrew is from Wichita. But I'm going to chalk this up to another college basketball casualty.
So, first of all, we all have to acknowledge you are aware of what goes on in the college basketball world, clearly.
No, I found out. Okay. Someone pointed it out to me. Yeah. I didn't actively seek it out. But look, because Andrew's not here, you're going to have a great show.
What's
so funny about that? You laughed. For the record, David laughed at that. We're going to have Ryan Hollingshead of FC Dallas. He has a fantastic story. You're going to want to stay tuned to that. Then we have Brian Chiaretta, who has unbelievable insight into the three rosters that were named by U.S. Soccer on Sunday.
And
so that's coming
en route to Europe right now, ready to cover it.
Correct. Brian Chiaretta is. He writes for American Soccer Now and New York Times. He's a New York Times contributor as well. But we're going to start with the new stadium, San Jose, Avaya Stadium. And for the first time, we got to see it on TV, those of us who were not able to be in San Jose. And
Which was a sellout, 18,000 flat.
By all accounts, it was a special, memorable experience there. And as a viewer on TV, it felt like now Avaya Stadium has a look to it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was worried for a little that maybe, you know, it would be a cookie-cutter type stadium. But on TV, it has a distinct look to it, the way the seats are divided. What were your impressions?
Yeah, I thought it was a great buzz. You could feel the energy when you're watching on TV. Some stadiums allow for that, some don't. And it's fantastic when some do because it genuinely makes it more exciting to say, I want to watch a San Jose game. Like people say that with Portland games or Sporting KC games that happen at Sporting Park, because it makes it more exciting to watch. You could feel that energy. And then you have the perfect way to go about it. You know, you get the goal and the right in front of
early,
the supporter section.
Fourth minute.
You get it early. The crowd goes crazy. The draft pick gets the goal. And it was a fun game. I thought it was actually a fun game throughout. Chicago's been a part of a couple tough games early on.
If you're new to MLS, the San Jose crowd, for me, top five, most knowledgeable, most passionate, and that passion comes across. And every sub that happened, they had a little view of the camp. You see the entire section of the stadium, this entire side, standing up, applauding their guys as they're going off for every sub. It's a knowledgeable crowd out there, so it's fun to see them now with their own home, and they're going to be loud, and they're going to get rowdy there. Great TIFO, by the way. Did you see the TIFO?
The Spartans. It was the 300.
From 300. Yeah. One of the few movies I've seen. I've seen that one. That was an excellent movie.
Was it an excellent movie?
It was an excellent movie.
Did you see the second
There's
one?
There's a second one?
I just saw the second one within two
What's
weeks.
What's it called?
I don't know. Just don't see it.
Really?
Yeah, it's really bad.
I'll watch it. Because you're telling me not to, I will be watching it. But the game itself, as you mentioned, they go up early, Fatai Alashe, and then Ty Harden gets his first goal in his 100th appearance for the club.
Clarence Goodson creating both goals off set pieces.
Goals.
It was very Dom Kinnear-like of a game.
So San Jose playing well, I thought, and then Chicago, they slowly claw their way back into it. They got a goal from Harrison Shipp, their first goal of the season. And they came close a few times, but not able to get the results. So San Jose starts their stadium.
But David Akam comes in for the second half. He's the DP I think everyone's most excited about. What do you think about what you saw?
Unbelievable change of pace. And we saw that with Ghana at the African Nations Cup. I think what maybe should concern Fire fans, and we'll see if we get answers this week, what's going on. Forward Kennedy Igbuanike. What's going on with him?
Yeah.
Why is he coming off the bench? Is it injury related? Why does he not fit?
No, part of it, and I'll tell you this right now, I don't know the story, but you cannot take Quincy Ameriquois off the field. So there's one spot taken.
By the way, speaking of taking him off the field, he was taken off the field in that game as a sub.
Yes,
and it didn't sound like he had – he wasn't taking it well.
Did he complain?
The audio on the sideline was always picking up sound.
Yeah.
He did not sound happy.
I didn't hear that. But I thought it was a fun game. I thought it was a better performance from Chicago. And you've said – you don't know if Shipp and Maloney can both play at the same time. And right now it looks like Shipp has to be the one who's on the field.
Shipp is overshadowing the DP, Sean Maloney.
Yeah.
The other game on Sunday, New York Red Bulls and DC United meeting in an Atlantic Cup rivalry. But I got to tell you, it didn't feel like rivalry to me. I just didn't see it on the field. I didn't see the intensity out of either team. Red Bulls had more energy, and I felt like they had more of a clear idea of what they were doing on the field with their pressing, and thus they come away with a 2-0 win. The Bradley Wright Phillips scoring first, then Lloyd Sam in the second half, and it was a fairly easy win for the Red Bulls.
It feels like DC doesn't have the point in terms of where they want to attack, how they want to go about their games. I think without a Spindola out there, there's just no direction to it, and that comes, I think, across as a lack of intensity from what you're seeing. They just don't feel like they have their game plan where they're saying, this is what we have to do to win.
Right, but
they're kind of just out there.
But David, didn't we see a lack of a game plan against Alajuelense?
Yeah, and Montreal.
In that first leg in the Champions League, and a Spindola was on the field.
Yeah. Well, that was a little different because, one, clearly Bill Hamid was a big loss in that game. Two, that was the first game they played of the year on the road in that environment. It was tough. I thought they were much better, though, in the second leg against Alajuelense. So I think that they improved, but they clearly have steps to go. And it just
which is shocking for a team that finished first last year and returning so many of its faces.
And then on the flip side, you have a Red Bull team that has a lot
brand
of new pieces,
new. Yeah.
Who looks very comfortable, but they're being led by guys who were. Bradley Wright Phillips was a star last year. Lloyd Sam has been on the verge of breaking out, you could say, as a star for a little over a year now. And without Henri there controlling so much of the play, he's moving in field and he's taking the ball and he can take anyone on that he wants. And he can score in a lot of different ways. We've seen it. And now we're starting to see him just spread around the field and control play.
That was a big theme about how Jesse March is using Lloyd Sam in a different way. We're going to see more out of Lloyd Sam as a feature piece. Look, the Red Bulls had three center midfielders in Dax McCarty, Sasha Kljestan, and Felipe Martins. And Ben Olsen at halftime was like, you know, we can't deal with the three. Of course you can't deal with the three because I believe coaches need to adapt sometimes to the teams you're facing. And that was a situation where I thought, going in, I think everyone looked at that and said, they're going to get outnumbered in midfield. And that's what happened. And they really couldn't get started. Some stuff from Saturday, where we had a couple scoreless draws, but Orlando versus Vancouver, that was going scoreless until Octavio Rivero gets the goal in stoppage time.
3-3 for the big man.
To me, that was the best goal of the weekend.
Yeah?
With the back of his head, chipping, clipping it.
Now, first of all, there's not much competition in that category this week because of so many drops. And coming off a week where you said it's the most exciting league in the world, it was a little bit of cold water on your argument. But it's going to tend to happen early in a season. But
Before we get into that, because I want to get into that.
Yeah.
But let's take Orlando versus Vancouver for a moment. Orlando City, it seems like when they're in the attack, it's not clear to me that their options are Kevin Molino and Kaká playing quick 1-2s, or else there is no other option. And maybe is that because perhaps Carlos Rivas is not on the field right now. He's out injured. Or perhaps, you know, their Honduran DP, Brian Roches, is not there. Because if that's your game plan for this year, Kaká and Molino trying to do 6 1-2s, wall passes to get into the box, that's not going to work.
And here's the thing. It will work sometimes because they're such good players. But it won't work over the course of a year. So it may work next week, and everyone's going to come to you and say, Simon, you're an idiot, which is true outside of this as well as in this argument. But I just think that I agree
with
you. I have
a pen in my hand. People come.
Vancouver came in there and said, we're just going to stop up the middle. We're not going to let Kaká through the middle, and it works.
Terrible pronunciation. I have to call you out on that.
Kaká.
But
so,
Vancouver, though, they stay in the game.
Yeah.
They're gritty. And Rivero, he's a forward who gets his chances. Mm-hmm. He has a little bit of Carlos Ruiz in him from the old days, for those of you who've been around the league long enough.
Can I take a stab at this?
Yeah.
El Pescadito.
So I think they've really found someone in Octavio Rivero who's gonna produce, even when your DP leader, Pedro Morales, doesn't. Morales, again, a game on the road, it doesn't show up. The other thing we'll highlight from the Saturday slate, Montreal-New England, and we highlight that game. It was 0-0. New England still struggling. They haven't scored yet, correct?
No.
And Montreal, my heart goes out to Cameron Porter. A guy who had one of the moments of his career just a couple weeks back in the Champions League.
Well, he's had the best 2 weeks of his life, I'm sure.
And then we don't know yet what the extent of the injury is. We're still waiting to hear, but it didn't look good on television. And he was pounding the ground almost as if he knew something bad.
And a worry for Montreal, Dominic Adair also went off with an injury in this game. Justin Mapp out with an injury. And their DP Piatti wasn't at the game for personal reasons. So a lot of missing pieces for a team that's flying in Champions League right now.
And all of a sudden, you look at that second leg semifinal and you wonder, Oduro and Cam Reporter were always going to be big pieces for that. But after the weekend, still leading the league. FC Dallas on a full 9 points, three games, three wins. And they won on the road this time in Philadelphia. A Zach Pfeffer red card, which he seems to believe wasn't that bad, which he is
looked
wrong.
Very bad.
It was really bad. And that was really the turning point. Dallas get two goals, and they comfortably win 2-0. One of the goal scorers on that day, Ryan Hollingshead. He scored the second one off the bench. He joins us now on Extra Time Radio. Ryan, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Ryan, that ball was rolling so slowly into the net. I mean, you could have had a cup of tea watching that go in.
Oh, man. The second I hit it, I saw the placement was good, and I was not convinced that it had enough speed on it. I was very, very pleased when it happened to sneak in that back post. But, yeah, I was thinking the same thing, man. I was going to run over the bench, get a quick water break, and then come back and see if it was in.
Now, people who have now seen you come into games, you go at goal. You're not a typical midfielder. You're more of a winger slash forward, right? Because you're always involved in and around the box, it seems.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I try to bring is I try to get to the box and get inside the box as much as possible. But I feel like I can go kind of both sides. I can get back defensively and go box to box 18-18. So that's what I try to do, especially as a sub. I kind of expected to have a little bit more energy by the time that I get subbed on. So I try to do that, try to be that player that can kind of go box to box.
And coming into the league, a lot of people expected you as a left midfielder, but you've shown versatility. And like we said, your ability in the box, your goal scoring net, or your eye for goal, do you have a preferred position, and has that evolved at all since you've come into MLS?
Man, that's a great question. At this point, I feel like I can't be picky. You know, I'm still coming off the bench, and so I just want to play any spot that's going to get me on the field, and ultimately any spot that's going to get me that start. Because as much as I like getting subbed off the bench, I would love to be a starter and not have to come in at halftime or come in at different points or different parts of the game. So, I mean, I think anywhere in the midfield, I feel comfortable. I feel comfortable up at forward, but to be honest, I've played almost every position. I mean, I feel like I could even compete as an outside back or something. So, to be honest, I just want to be on the field, and wherever that works out, I'm happy to be there.
Ryan, this moment that FC Dallas is experiencing, a great start to the season, and it really comes from last year, it seems. It's just carrying over a great team spirit. Guys look united, at least on the field, when we watch you guys. Take us a little bit into the locker room. What's the dynamic that you're seeing that maybe is resulting in this success on the field?
Yeah, man. I mean, first and foremost, I think we just have a good team. We got a lot of guys who can play. And a lot of guys fighting for spots where there's a depth to this team that I haven't really seen before. And then on top of that, we just enjoy each other. I mean, a lot of our starting lineup is the exact same as it was a year ago. And we left last season with a chip on our shoulder a little bit, thinking that we could have easily been playing in December. Instead, we got knocked out in November. And so I think that has kind of led into the beginning of this season, where we've come out with a fire and a tenacity that has really led to these first three wins. And I think what we're trying to do this year is not let it stop here. And SC Dallas, just in general, is kind of known for having amazing starts and then hitting a lull in the middle of the season. And so we're trying to make sure that doesn't happen again this year. But we've definitely put ourselves in a good spot as of now.
Now, Oscar Pareja, your coach, he seems like a guy that players want to play for. And at least that's how it comes across to me. I'm just wondering, when you joined the team, and we'll get into the story, you got drafted by Shelus Hyndman, and then he left, and then you joined the team when Oscar Parejo was coach. When you joined the club, what was your experience with Oscar Pareja as your boss?
Maybe mine was a little bit different from the rest of the guys on the team, but absolutely for me, I was coming into a coach who absolutely did not know my circumstance, did not know kind of what had happened the year prior, and he was coming into a team not knowing kind of where I was coming from, and so it was a tough transition for me and for Oscar. I think for sure after taking a year off, Oscar was expecting me to come back in pristine shape, ready to go, and I was expecting to take a little bit of time to get back into it. And so that kind of set us off on the wrong foot. But I think from there, we've been really connecting well. And he's one of those guys, like you said, that you just want to fight for. And he's a player's coach for sure. He's played in the league. He's played for years. And recently, like, it hasn't been 30 years since he played, you know. So I think he understands us, understands where the players are coming from. I think it was a little bit different for me in my situation. But I still really enjoy playing for him and think that, he does have my best in mind. And I think he has the best in mind for the rest of our team and the rest of our players. And a lot of people have been very excited about the fact that he plays people who are performing. So if you're earning your spot, he gives you the chance to play and prove it. And on a first team game, where I know a lot of other coaches in the league get criticized for not doing the same.
Yep. And Ryan, for those who don't know, here we are talking about your absence, and I'll give this brief synopsis. You were drafted in the draft in 2013 by FC Dallas. You decided to take a year off to help your brother set up a church in Sacramento, if I'm not mistaken. And then after you did that and you were ready to come back, it was December 2013 when you signed officially with FC Dallas and joined them for the 2014 season. So were you keeping yourself fit during that year? You said that maybe Oscar Pereja was expecting a different level of fitness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was staying fit, but there's just nothing compared to playing MLS-style, first-team-style soccer. And so as much as I was running or as much as I was, you know, playing pickup basketball with friends or just being active, I'm naturally an active guy. And so I was staying in good shape, but it's just a whole different level for what MLS soccer calls for. And so I came in with enough of a base there, you know, finishing in the top 25% of fitness tests that we would do as a team. But even that is not much of an indicator for when it comes to cutting and turning and moving with the ball. And so those things were definitely more of a struggle for me at the beginning, getting back into it. And I think because Oscar wasn't familiar with my story and where I was coming from, for him it didn't make sense. Like, who is this rookie coming in here, not ready to go and not fully prepared? And so my meetings with him was trying to convince him and let him know, like, hey, well, the second I signed this contract, I did everything in my power to get fit. I mean, I was running two-a-days on my own, getting practices, competition with literally any team I could jump on, doing sprints and long distance runs and basically everything I could in my power to get ready once I did sign that contract and say that I was going to come play in 2014. So it was hard convincing him and getting him to see that. And I think for him, he was expecting the transition to happen quicker. And so when it didn't happen as quick as he was thinking, it was just a little bit hard to get on the same page. But I think now I've finally showed him, and having another off season under my belt and getting another couple months off and getting some time to refocus and get fit again and concentrate on things that I needed to work on in this last off season, I think finally showed him and proved to him this guy was working and was putting in the effort. I just didn't see it, and I can clearly see it now. So that's definitely helped me out.
For people that don't know, tell them a little bit about the decision to take time off. And you're talking about now what Pareja was seeing, and was the conversations with Clavijo and Hyman, the reason that you felt like you could take that time off, maybe if you hadn't been drafted by Dallas, you wouldn't have, or was it something that you were always set on doing?
Yeah, I was always set on doing it. And I know in the beginning of the draft talk, so December of 2012, so before they even before the draft even happened, teams would call and would talk. And I remember in those months getting called by a lot of teams and letting them know I wasn't interested and that it wasn't looking good in terms of me playing because I was going to go to Sacramento and help my brother start this church. And Dallas was actually one of those teams that I didn't get in contact with and didn't hear from. And so I was expecting that just in talks throughout the league, they would understand, hey, his name's off the table. Don't draft this guy. You know, he's not thinking about playing. And so when they drafted me, the first call I got was Fernando just saying, hey, we heard talks that you might not be playing, that you might be going to Sacramento to start this church with your brother, but we thought it was worth the risk to go ahead and draft you. And so I think from day one, Dallas and I were on the same page. They were doing it more as a whim, thinking if I do come and play that it was worth their pick. And I, on the other hand, was thinking, you know, there is a chance down the road that this could work out. And if it does, great. And if not, you know, I'm sorry, but that was what I was trying to tell the teams that were in contact with me. So I think they knew what to expect, but I think they were hoping and praying that my competitive nature wouldn't let me give up soccer that easily. And it ended up turning out that way. So.
And the rumors while you were away was that you would never play, not just that you would take some time off. Was that ever actually a thought in your mind, or was that just something that was being discussed? And then what finally made you make the decision that, yes, this is something that I want to go all in on, and this is something that I want to do?
Yeah, I mean, and I think any time you turn down an offer to go play soccer, there's never a guarantee that offer is going to be there again. So when I first got drafted, I knew they had my rights, but upon me saying no and saying I was going to go to Sacramento to start this church, I was effectively saying I wasn't sure if I was ever going to play, because I wasn't sure if they were going to keep that contract on the table, if they were going to rescind it and take it back. And so there was definitely that possibility that it was the end. So yeah, I think going into it, I thought, hey, this may not work out. I may not ever be able to come back and play soccer, but this is the decision that I want to make, and this is the way I want to go. And if it ends up working out that I do get to come back and play, that would be awesome, and I'm excited for it. But if not, then that's something I'm willing to live with. And so that's what I did going forward. And then it was one of the circumstances. It was around October that this church that my older brother and I were starting, it was around October that it officially started. So it's called launching, and it officially launched. Everything was up and running. The church was fully functioning. And it was at that point that my brother was able to hire a pastor on staff that was basically doing what I was doing for free for the church. And so all the roles that I was fulfilling for the church at that point had to be done, but there was no funds to do them. And so that's kind of where I came in to step into that role. And then once this church was up and running and the funds were coming in, my older brother, who is the pastor of that church, was able to then have funds to bring somebody on staff to do what I was doing. And so that's when my brother and I looked at each other and said, hey, if we've got somebody I can bring on to do what you're doing, like, this is your chance to go play professional soccer if that's still something you're interested in. And it was at the same time I was talking with Dallas, just keeping them updated where we were and where the church was at and how the family was doing. And so we were in constant communication during that time. And so those two things kind of coincided around the end of the year, where FC Dallas basically said, this is perfect. At this point, you can come for next year's preseason, and we can get you started from the beginning of the year. And so that's kind of how it all worked out.
Ryan, how's the church doing now?
Man, the church is awesome, and it is flourishing, man. I miss it so much, but I get to call and talk to my brother weekly and just hear what's going on and what God's meaning to do there. And so it's amazing, man. I think they've got up to, it started with two people on staff when I left. I think right now they've got six or seven on full-time staff, and they've got just a ton of people constantly coming through their doors. And so the church is great. My brother is doing awesome, and it's flourishing, so I couldn't be happier.
Give me an idea, if you can, of what was the work that you were doing. So you were essentially serving as a pastor. What did that work entail? And for those listening, what's the denomination of the church?
Yeah, so it's a non-denominational Christian church. So it's just Bible-believing, Bible-preaching. So everything they do comes straight from the Word of God, straight from the Bible, and that's kind of how it's run. And so in the beginning of a church plant, you really are doing everything. So I was the technology guy running all the slides, running all the sound and the music and the equipment. And I was the guy leading small groups. So like outside of the church gathering on Sundays, the body, the people that go to that church are also meeting weekly. So they're meeting every weeknight in a smaller group, in a smaller setting. And just kind of doing life with each other and just getting to know each other and working out the Bible kind of in each other's lives. And so that was me. I was in charge of forming those groups and setting those up and running those and equipping our leaders to do those. And then on top of that, running basically everything you need to start a church. So you need guys to tear down all of the chairs and everything that you put up. You need somebody to set up all the chairs and set up all the equipment and get everything ready for Sunday. You need people to sing and play guitar and lead worship. You need people to greet when people are walking in the door. You need people to basically just do everything, usher people into their seats. Like, there's so many jobs that need to get done. And so at the beginning, I was wearing multiple different hats, basically trying to just cover everything we needed to get done, and therefore let my brother focus more on the teaching aspect and giving sermons and being able to lead people well in that way. And so I was trying to basically do all the dirty work that I could, all the work that just had to be done, to take that off his plate so he could focus more on the things that he needed to do. And so that's kind of what it was, and it was just for this Christian church up in Sacramento.
Life as a pro soccer player, very, very different, I imagine.
Yeah, very different. I mean, it was a crazy time because I was working a full-time job to pay the bills while on top working full-time at this church, and so it was a lot. And now my schedule is a lot more open. But both seasons of life, that season of starting the church and this season now of playing soccer, have been great. And I really wouldn't change it for the world. It's been frustrating, of course, trying to get back into the soccer world and trying to prove my worth again as a soccer player and trying to earn that starting spot. But even with all that frustration and even with having to rebuild my foundation of soccer, I still wouldn't have changed that decision for anything. And I'm so glad that I ended up going to Sacramento to do that. And even to this day, you know, miss that church, but no, now that I'm supposed to be in Dallas and that God has me here for now, and I'm loving it. So really both decisions were exactly what needed to happen.
I'm curious, when you got acclimated again into the soccer world, the pro soccer world, and people got to know your story, fellow teammates, players on other teams, guys you knew, what was the reaction like from fellow professionals? Did anyone say, you know, come up to you and say, man, you're crazy for doing what you did? Did anyone maybe come up to you and say, you know what, I wish I could do the same?
Yeah, I've gotten both sides. I think at the beginning it was a lot more like, who is this guy and what does he think he's doing? What an idiot, what a mistake. And then I think once I actually came and joined the team and got to know people in the league and obviously had a lot of buddies playing from playing in the league that I played against when I was younger, and I think they understand me a little bit more and understand my story and my faith a little bit more. But I think once guys saw me coming back and saw the work I was putting into it and saw how hard I was working and training and everything, I think I gained their respect back pretty quickly. But yeah, man, I mean, I got a lot of different thoughts at the beginning. I got called ridiculous and an idiot and what a mistake many times. But I think now people look at it as a pretty cool thing that I cared about something that much and my heart was set on something that much. So,
but Ryan, they weren't telling that to you to your face, were they?
No, a couple did. Yeah, a couple people were very clear that my first decision was a mistake and going to plant the church was a mistake and I can't believe that you would jeopardize your soccer career to do something like that. And that was fine by me. I mean, I knew what I was doing and, it led to good conversations where I got to like discuss why I would even get into something like that. But I think the change happened where a lot of people and a lot of teammates especially saw that, that maybe there's something bigger than soccer out there and, that soccer isn't maybe just the everything. And and so there's definitely teammates and friends and people who were proud that I went for what I felt convicted to do, and even when that was a hard decision, and because I think a lot of teammates wouldn't have done the same thing. And so I think part of it was them just kind of being envious of that, it's hard to word this correctly, but just kind of seeing like the guts that it took and them respecting that, I guess that's the best way to put it. It was not an easy decision, but they respect that I was able to make that decision and be completely satisfied with it and not question it. So
Ryan, I have to ask you mentioned that the church was in Sacramento and you really enjoyed your time there. And right now, one of the big topics around MLS is a potential Sacramento Major League Soccer expansion team. And we were wondering if maybe you could give us a feel for what the buzz is like in that city for that team or the sport or the game and what you think about a potential team there.
Man, I am absolutely biased in this, but I think Sacramento has to get a team, man. I think, first of all, California is an amazing sport or amazing place for soccer. People in California love playing soccer. They've got the Galaxy down there. They've got San Jose, who have already proven to be very successful teams. And so I think adding Sacramento to the mix would be huge. And then Sacramento itself, man, they need a sports team to get behind. The Kings are their basketball team, and that's kind of the only sport they've had as a city. And I mean, they are amazing fans. There's been times where Sacramento's been ranked in the top of basketball fans, and I think they've proven that they would do the same if a soccer team came. Their soccer team's good. I think they won the USL this first year. They've gotten so many sold out tickets and sold out stadiums and sold out everything. And I think they've got a mayor there who's fighting for them and working with whatever they can to approve plans for a stadium and all this stuff. So really every piece of the puzzle is there, and I think they could absolutely do it. And then on top of that, the perk is the team that they have playing there is good, man. Like, they are a good team that could easily get adapted into the MLS level. So yeah, I'm definitely biased, but I would love to see a team get planted up there. And I don't think there's any question that the entire city would get behind the team. And Sacramento itself is primarily a suburb city. Like, the city itself isn't huge, but around the city, there's just a ton of development, and that's really where all the soccer is getting played. And I think they would be an unbelievable market for soccer.
After such a deep discussion, we're going to end on trivial matter, FIFA. And David put it out there on Twitter, and he got some feedback about your FIFA Twitter score.
Well, some of our fans want to know, first of all, do you play FIFA?
Oh, that's a great question. I play FIFA periodically with some of my teammates, with some of the guys, because They love FIFA, but I'm decent. Like, I beat a lot of players, but the second I play with my team, I'm by far the worst. So I don't last long, especially when you play Winter Stays On. I'm off the Xbox for a lot of the time.
But
so
when you play,
I dabble.
When you play, do you play as FC Dallas? Do you play as yourself?
Oh, man, we almost never play FC Dallas, and I almost never play it myself. I'm so bad on that game.
Well, that's what
my rating is, like 50 or something. So
that's what the question was. Why isn't your FIFA rating higher? It has you as a 60 overall. So what's your complaint to EA right now?
Hey, oh, my gosh. I looked at my speed or my sprinting. I think I was, like, at 60 or something, which is ridiculous. So I was trying to sprint down the sideline with my guy, and I got caught so fast. It was unbelievable. So I'm not sure who makes those ratings, but I know the MLS doesn't get much love, and because I haven't played much in the MLS, I'm sure I didn't get much love at all. So once I get a couple more goals and a couple more starts, I'll put in a good word to EA Sports and get that changed.
EA Sports needs to start watching Ryan Hollingshead and FC Dallas. Hollingshead, after a good preseason, now showing it in the regular season. Ryan, thank you so much, and continued best of luck during the course of the season.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the time. Thanks again to Ryan Hollingshead. He's a fun guy to talk to. Hopefully he gets more chances. I think he has a combination, David, of size and speed, then I think he's going to be a bigger weapon for FC Dallas as the season goes on.
He reminds me a lot of an Andrew Wenger as well, the way he plays, the way he can affect the game.
Ooh, we're going to get into comparing those two, because I would tell you that I take Hollingshead over Wenger.
Right, and now. I'm sure you would.
Why?
Well, it's just, you know, it's not the way most people, I think, would go in that conversation.
Well, I think by the end of the year, we'll see where those two net out. We'll get into Kevin Doyle talk. He's going to be a new DP for Colorado coming in the summer. We'll get into Minnesota expansion talk. That's on everyone's mind right now, but we'll do that in segment three. Segment two coming up right now, we'll dig into the U.S. soccer roster announcement that happened on Sunday. We have three of them. Brian Schroeder will join us. That's after the break.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
What up, guys? It's Chris Sykes with FC Dallas, and you guys are listening to Extra Time Radio.
A little more, Dave. A little more.
I don't want to blow people's heads off.
Back on Extra Time Radio, MLSsoccer.com, SiriusXM, Channel 94. I'm Simon Borg along with David Goss, and we are going to talk national team now. And we got three rosters. If you get crazy about one roster, you got three of them on Sunday.
It was just a feast of U.S. national team rosters.
Senior roster, U23 roster, the Olympic camp, the first one of 2015.
Also, a women's roster came out last week as well from Jill Ellis. I know you don't want to talk about that, but...
No, I mean, we can.
No, I'm just saying...
What stood out to you there?
Nothing.
No, just tell me. No, you bring it up.
I wasn't ready to talk about it.
Oh, really?
I was just saying four rosters have
four,
come out.
Four rosters, but on Sunday it was three. The U21 was the other one. They're preparing for the World Cup in the summer, obviously. What stands out to me is the fact that Jossie Zardes getting the call up, the LA Galaxy star. I think the January camp did wonders for him. I believe now he quickly became a protege of Klinsmann. It's the game he played against Panama, mm-hmm. coupled with, I think, everything you heard coming out of camp where players were so high on Jossie Zardes and the work ethic. And I think working under Bruce Arena, he's learned how to be the good soldier. Mm-hmm. And he did that in U.S. camp, and I think he's won over.
I think that's just also part of his personality.
He's won over Jurgen Klinsmann.
Yes.
I think he's now officially a Klinsmann
guy. So you think if he were, let's just say, for example, playing for the Hamburg U20 team and getting off the bench, he'd still get called into this camp? Jossie Zardes?
Yes.
Now, it's impossible for him to play for that team because of his age, but I just want to see where you thought he stood.
Yes.
Okay.
I think he's won. The big difference here is that he's doing it with results, David.
Yeah.
He's not doing it with name.
How many World Cup goals does he have?
Okay.
Not yet.
Continue on.
He doesn't have any yet. Jussie's artist does. But I would be surprised if he is not playing a featured role in that in the U.S. national team matches against Denmark and against Switzerland coming up this week and next. He's one of six MLS players. The others are Jozy Altidore, Clint Dempsey of the Seattle Sounders, Michael Bradley of Toronto FC, Breck Shea of Orlando City, and Nick Raimondo of Real Salt Lake.
And don't forget, check your fantasy teams because other MLS players have been called up to other national teams.
I think the number's like over 60. Mm-hmm. So definitely, if you have your fantasy teams you're working on. Now, to get into all these roster call-ups, anything that stood out to you before we get to Brian Schroeder?
I mean, everyone's saying Jeff Cameron, but I just think
Cameron not getting called.
Yeah, not getting called up because Klinsmann said he wanted to look at some people.
Plays for Stoke City.
Yeah,
He's a fairly regular player for them.
I think the biggest thing for me has been the Olympic team looks very just thrown together. And
it
also
does, doesn't it?
Where they
it
chose does. To put people that Rubio Rubin's on the full team, that Will Trapp's on the Olympic team, just the way they decided to move guys around.
I think the priority has to be the U-20 team. They are the team that right now is facing the most important tournament first. Am I wrong?
But what does that mean? Just because it's your priority maybe doesn't mean that Rubio Rubin won't get better as a player and be better for the U-20s if he's playing with the full team in this camp. And I think that's where the conversation has to be between the coaches.
We'll try to decipher all this with Brian Schroeder, who's on his way to the airport. He's going to head to Denmark to cover that Denmark-USA match, and he's also covering the youth teams in Europe for these camps. Brian, he's a writer for American Soccer Now, lead writer, and he's also a contributor for the New York Times. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on, Simon. Great to be on.
Well, I think we'll get to the senior team first, and I think what stands out to a lot of fans are the two names that, you know, the debutants here, William Yarbrough, the goalkeeper from Leon, and Ventura Alvarado. We've heard a lot of this guy with Club America. He's broken into the first team at times. He's played at right back, center back. What can you tell us about these two guys? Why are these two guys on this roster?
Well, you know, a good answer is that these guys aren't just role players. I mean, these are guys that are both players now who have won Liga MX titles as starters in final games. Yarbrough's won two. Alvarado's just won one, most recently in December. So you're looking at players who are not just, you know, a roster filler or in mid-tier teams. These are guys who've been, you know, the cream of the crop there in Mexico. So I think it's a good, you know, it's an interesting combo. I mean, now all of a sudden we get to see another generation of you know, the Mexican American player pool, if you will, and see if that starts to bear fruit. You know, it's people are wondering where Edgar Castillo and Jose Torres, you know, both those guys seem to stagnate on the U.S. national team. This is a different group of players, and I think Alvarado addresses weaknesses there in the back line. You know, and neither of these guys have played for you know, any U.S. team before, you know, youth or otherwise. Alvarado, I think, is playing very good soccer, and you know, central defense is obviously, I think, an area of concern. Even if some of the younger guys coming up are doing very well, I mean, you have to think with Alvarado. With guys like Jermaine Jones playing central defense, you know, you have to think that there could be an opening along the lines there in the back line. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. He's been playing. You know, Club America is one of the biggest clubs in the world outside of Europe. So it's going to, you know, to start there is no small accomplishment. And Yarbrough, I mean, you know, it's going to be, I think the backup keeper position, you know, behind Guzan and while Howard's out is still wide open. And, you know, I think he's going to see some time while he's over there too, especially with Brad Guzan out.
You mentioned the Mexican-American talent pool and how it could help the national team. We know how successful Jurgen Klinsmann has been with recruiting dual national German-Americans. He mentioned the need to get the Latin American dual nationals to play. He hasn't been as successful. Do you think that's because he hasn't seen talent that he wants to recruit, or he's been unable to get guys to come in the past?
Well, I mean, there's not that many, you know, Mexican-American talent players that have you know, played for Mexico. I mean, Brizuela, a couple guys who Ponce, a couple of these guys, no one really that stands out as like a massive loss for the U.S. program. So it seems to suggest that the Mexican-American player pool, you know, there are some very good players, but, you know, it hasn't led to like the revolution that people were hoping for U.S. soccer, thinking that this community was going to be a big part of the national team. You know, so far, while recruiting, you know, it's going to be tough, though, when these players do come along, because it's one thing to recruit a German-American player, you know, player, because there's very few players that are good enough for the German national team, which is the best in the world, and they're only getting better and deeper. When a player starts to get good, there's a more likely chance, a Mexican-American player starts to get good, there's a more likely chance that, both the U.S. and Mexico will want to go after this player, and he will have a legitimate option between both teams. But, so far the scorecard is like, I don't really think there's major losses for the U.S. or Mexico in this battle for these players. So we'll see how it goes. Whether or not, Ventura Alvarado or Yarbrough become one that, the Mexican national team regrets that they've lost.
Now, Brian, six MLS players called up to the senior squad here, and Jurgen Klinsmann explained a little why maybe there aren't more MLS players. He talked about form being an issue. The MLS season has just started, so he's opting for players who play in other leagues who have been going for a lot longer, so you only see the six names here. But there are six MLS players who are just starting their season. Is there anything to be read into the fact that guys like Matt Beisler, who were in January camp, are not in this camp?
Yeah, I mean, this is a long-standing debate, and everyone has their own theories. I think that Jurgen does have a favoritism towards a player playing in Europe versus a player playing in Major League Soccer, and I think that he does want to take advantage. This is the first FIFA date since November, to have some of these guys at his disposal. So I think he wants to take advantage of that. So, and the fact that they do secure that friendly against Mexico in a few weeks in Texas he's going to give these Major League Soccer players a look there as well. And that if that friendly wasn't taking place in a few weeks, I think that this roster would look quite a bit different. So, yeah, I still think he wants to sift through his playing pool, see what he has, because, look, it's been a long time since he's seen these European players. And the last couple of times he's seen them, they did not look good. I mean, the results have been, were very poor coming across the through the fall months in those September, October, and November international windows.
Go ahead.
No, so I said, I think that, it's a chance to try to right the ship a little bit too. Yes, he does have a little bit of a favoritism towards European players, but yeah, I think that he's got to try to, hoping he wants to give these European base players a look to see if anything's been turned around, see if he can turn this thing around as the Gold Cup fast approaches.
Now, there are a lot of names on this roster that we've seen play before on the senior team, but for two guys in particular, it's been a while. Aaron Johansson at forward, obviously injury had a lot to play in that one, and Danny Williams now for the first time in a long time. That's one name that I'm curious to see what he looks like. What name stands out to you that we haven't touched on?
Well, I mean, both those guys are big. I mean, just to touch on this, Aaron Johansson is going to be playing at his former home city, where he played a lot. In Denmark, that's where he made a name for himself, and that's where Jurgen Klinsmann first became aware of him, was how he played at Aarhus. So he's going to be going back to his own club. And I think, Danny Williams, since he missed a lot of this season with an injury, but since he's been back, he's been able to help Reading during their great FA Cup run that they're in right now. But yeah, there's a lot. I mean, those guys are, you hit the nail on the head. Those are players that I think, because they're young, they're in the age, they're going to be hitting their peak during the next World Cup years and then throughout the next cycle, that now is a chance, perfect chance for them to kind of step up and take the reins right now and be a key part of this cycle, as opposed to kind of hanging on to players from last cycle. These are good players who can, put their stamp as players, to build on for Russia, that are not, like I said, not just like, carryovers from the previous cycle.
Is there anyone that you would describe, or you would say is maybe a snub for this roster? Someone you thought would be there? I think especially we'd assume guys in Europe that, like you said, on the FIFA date maybe don't have to travel that far, that you would have expected to see called in, maybe get a run out in this camp.
No, I mean, I think he's got everybody, between all three camps. Eric Lehigh is obviously the biggest name from the European-based players that you'd want to see on this team. But I think everyone's just kind of turned the page on that and just figured that Jurgen's, told him in once last cycle and, has seen enough and just doesn't really flat out rate him. Besides that, I think he's got everybody from Europe. I mean, I think the biggest snubs, if you want to use that term, probably still come from Major League Soccer. And, like, obviously everyone talks about Vistarud as being one, and maybe some of the other central defenders, you know, you wanted to see him, you know, continue to work on and build with, like Steve Birnbaum or Matt Hedges, who I thought, you know, were part of January camp. You wanted to see them continue a la they did with, you know, Jassy Zardes. But, you know, in terms of the European snubs, I think that, you know, obviously Brennan Guzan has a very good excuse, and, you know, I think that they got everybody that they needed to.
Brian, our listeners and David here think I have an axe to grind with Julian Green, which I don't. I just think it's a bit of a charade now what's going on. When's this going to end? Where do you stand on the Julian Green? What is he doing on this roster, for crying out loud?
Look, I mean, I think that I think that it is puzzling, and it's a very fair question to ask, why is he on this team? I mean, he's just not playing at all. I mean, you see guys now at the U-20 for the U-3 level, and even the U-20 team getting more first-team minutes than Julian Green. It's clear that Clemson rates him more than he sees him as his project, more than most coaches would. That being said, I think that it wouldn't surprise me if that he's bringing Julian in to train with the senior team and have some discussions as to what's going on with his club. And then after that, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think Clemson kind of left the door open for this to happen. After the first Denmark game on Wednesday, for him to shift down to the U-23s, because he is Olympic eligible, and maybe bring him up to at a pace that, you know, maybe he should be being brought up as a youth player, you know, play some youth games. There's nothing wrong with that. The Olympic team is a very important team to our program, and see if he can maybe use his experiences at big clubs and playing in the World Cup and benefit a youth team, which would seem, you know, probably the right decision.
That makes sense, but Julian Green is not going for that.
So Caleb Porter had opportunities. He called up a lot of camps going into Olympics qualifying. This is really the first Olympic roster that we've seen for the 2016 potentially Olympics and for the qualifiers. Give us your initial reaction to what this roster is made of. It's kind of a mismatch of guys. You have obviously some guys on the full team and U-20 team who could be in there. But what are your thoughts on this U-23 roster?
The U-23 roster, I think, is, you know, it's full of holes. I mean, you got players there who are, like, very good players. Luis Gil, Will Trapp, Shane O'Neill. I mean, guys who are the core of this team. And then you got guys like Alfred Caroma, who, like, have done little to nothing with their careers since, like, making the U-17 a long time ago. And, you know, and just still keep getting called up almost by default. So, you know, I think that this is a very, very, very difficult situation that Andy Herzog is in right now, because you got guys that he wants who are on the senior national team, guys like Brooks. I mean, I'm sure he would love to have Brooks on this team, but Brooks is a full national team player. Then you also have players who are on the, you know, U-20 team that he would probably like to have, too, on this team, maybe Emerson Hyman or maybe Cameron Carter-Vickers or Eric Palmer-Brown. But, you know, they have a World Cup to prepare for. So I don't think he's really going to get the full, you know, his full selection of players until maybe after the Gold Cup and after the U-20 World Cup. So that's going to leave him with such a little time before qualifying, because CONCACAF didn't do him many favors by having this qualifying in October, because it's really going to be very difficult for him to build a team. Yes, I know they're going to get it around a FIFA international date, but, I mean, the time on which he's going to have with his players is now, is the ideal team. He might be able to see if he has a diamond in the rough, but, you know, he's going to have to work with some players who almost have no chance of making his team. And now, and then all of a sudden when he does get his players, it's going to be such a limited, you know, maybe a camp or two, and then that's going to be it. It's going to be really something to watch.
Two of the guys that I'm interested on this roster, two MLS guys, are Kyrie Shelton and Alashi, who just got drafted. And it feels like almost they got called up to this camp based on their last 3 weeks of work and what they've done in MLS. I mean,
and I was hoping I would like to see Cameron Porter be part of that team, too, if he was not injured as well. I mean, he would have been eligible as well. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's all about, you know, quick judgments on some of these youth teams. But it's always been like that, too.
On the U-20 side, before we let you go here, Brian, not many surprises. And just coming off of seeing this team, I got to ask you this. This U-20 team plays the U-23 team that's currently been called up. Who wins the game? I say the U-20s.
I think they would. I mean, they have a better back line. And I think that, you know, the midfield, I think that the U-23s would win with Gil and trap, but I think Emerson Hyman would kind of even it out a little bit. And then I think that at forward, you know, you've got guys like Novakovic and who made his championship debut, and a couple guys who are used to, they're more used to playing with each other. So yeah, I think that the 20s are a little bit more of a well-oiled machine right now than the U23s, despite being younger. So yeah, I think that the 20s would definitely have a real shot at it.
And one of the guys who I thought was really good in U20 qualifying, who's not there right now, is Junior Flores. Do you know what the situation is with him not being called up?
Yeah, I heard it was a shoulder injury, you know, and I think, but look, I think that it's not a lock that he makes the roster either. I mean, I think Joel Sonora is going to be able to press him in that same role right now. So there's a competition for everybody. There's very few locks. You know, I know that he probably, Matt Miazga would probably be on this team as well if the Red Bulls, you know, he started yesterday. So, you know, the Red Bulls need him. So, yeah, I think that, you know, that's what I can say about Flores, and there's some other injuries too. Romain Gall is just another one, but you know, it's you know, between hopefully in the next couple of weeks, Ramos will be able to get his what he sees as his full squad together and start. You know, there's only so much more time to experiment with new players, and time has got to be coming soon, where he's got to be focusing on the team that he's going to be bringing to New Zealand.
And one of the players that I think a lot of U.S. fans have been excited about, who's had injury problems, is Will Packwood. He just came back into playing. I think he went on loan even farther down in England. Have you seen any of him playing? Do you know where his status is health-wise?
You know, I think he played against for League Two at Cheltenham Town last weekend, but he got a. I think he came off with a minor concussion. So you know, he just can't stay healthy. So it's been unfortunate. I mean, I know he had a U.S. full U.S. national team call up last year, I think, for Ukraine. He didn't play. But, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, he goes on these short loans, but then it's all going to come back to whether or not he can break into that Birmingham City lineup again. And then I think if he can do that, he'll get back into the picture. He's still young. But, you know, with the Olympic team, I think, you know, if they do qualify for the Olympics, you know, he's got to compete with Brooks and Shane O'Neill, I think, with, you know, if Brooks does drop down, I think he will drop down for the big tournaments. I think that they want to, U.S. wants to have a good Olympic showing. It's going to be tough for him to get back on the field with the 23s. It's just because I think that they got a lot of good central defenders. And I'm not counting out Cameron Carter-Vickers or Eric Palmer-Brown, even though they're both, you know, 17 years old, because, you know, the U.S. soccer really rates them highly. I think they're going to get fast-tracked into the U23s after this U20 World Cup. That's what my gut tells me.
Last one for you, Brian. Dembakwe Yomba, Atletico Madrid, on this U20 roster. For those who haven't seen this guy play, I mean, the name of the club is impressive. Mm-hmm. What is he like? Give me a player he's like if we were to compare games.
Oh, I mean, you know, he's short. I mean, I don't want to compare him to a player, but I can tell you a little about like his game size. I mean, he's short, but he's very athletic and strong. He has a good center of gravity, despite being like around the 5'5", 5'6" range. He's powerful.
So he's Joe Zhao. So he's Joe Zhao.
Yeah, he's speedy, but he's not really a winger. He's more of a straight up forward, unlike Joe. So, I mean, he's a little bit stockier, I think, than Joe. I don't think he's quite as fast, but he's still, you know, he's a good finisher on the net. And you know, he was able to use his passport to secure a deal in Spain, you know, and when that doesn't use up a foreign roster spot. So that was good for him to be able to do that. And, you know, and I think that, you know, Tab speaks highly of him, but, you know, I'm not necessarily sure he's a lock for this team, too, even if he is released. I think that the forward roster is extremely tight. And I think the only lock up there in the attacking positions is Rubio Rubin at this point. I mean, I think right now it's anything can go. And that's what's kind of fascinating, but also kind of a. Alarming, too, because you want to kind of know what your team is going to be like at this point.
You didn't want to compare him to players, but Yomba is Dom Dwyer, then.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I got it. Go.
I just wanted to ask you, you mentioned, you know, moving.
I promised him this was the last question, but
yeah,
go ahead.
I'm going to ask you the last one here, though. But you mentioned moving guys around and for the big tournaments, for Olympic qualifying, the U20 World Cup. It feels like at least Klinsmann, as the technical director, is focusing heavily on these youth tournaments. And producing in those tournaments, having a good showing, which hasn't really been the case in the past. They've wanted to do well, but they've wanted to develop players. Do you feel like there's been a shift at all in the mindset in U.S. soccer, or is this a reaction to 2008 and the issues that they had qualifying then? Oh, sorry, 2012.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the Olympics are a big deal. It's a big chance to get a lot of, you know, exposure, even if it's not the most highly rated soccer tournament, you know, particularly in the European countries. You know, you want to get big publicity and a good run. I mean, I remember 2000 when they made the semifinals. That was a big story. You know, I know they fell up short in the bronze medal game. But, you know, that had Donovan on it, and that had, you know, it had John O'Brien. So it was a good, you know, they want to kind of enjoy that. You know, success brings good press. You want to be able to, you want to kind of, you know, have something really good to write home about. And, you know, and look, I think that if, you know, putting some emphasis on these youth teams is smart. I mean, it's, unless you have some players who the senior team just can't live without. You know, I think that it's wise to use these players in their at their respective age groups to do well at these youth tournaments, and it helps the players out, gives them confidence, gives them good press around the team, and on top of that, it allows for a smoother transition. The more these kids aren't rushed through the system, they take their time with the 20s and they take their time with the 23s, then all of a sudden they move up together as a unit more towards the full national team. If you look at the 2008 Olympic team, how many of those guys then quickly were fast-tracked and played big roles on the full national team? It was a lot of players. It was from Stuart Holden to Michael Bradley to Josie Altidore to Charlie Davies. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. I mean, so the Olympic team is very important to this team. And if they could have another good Olympic showing in 2016, you can use a lot of those guys to have a very good, smooth transition towards 2018 for the full national team. So it does make sense to really prioritize the Olympics. But to prioritize the Olympics, I think, you know, the reason why the 2008 Olympic team was, you know, had a good group of guys because the 2007 U20 team had a good group of guys too. I mean, they went to the quarterfinals. So I think that, you know, there is a case to be made for a good transition between these teams.
Brian,
and I think they should do that. They're aiming to do that again.
Brian, I hope we made your ride to the airport entertaining. It's probably not the case for your taxi driver, but at least for you.
Oh, it's been great, as always. I hope to be back on with you guys again soon.
Great. Brian Chereda on his way to Denmark and to Europe to cover the youth teams. He'll also be in London. You can catch all his work as lead writer for American Soccer Now and with the New York Times. Brian, thanks again for the time.
Thank you very much, Simon. Look forward to being back on again soon.
Thanks again to Brian Chereda. So, again, the games, the matches, March 25th, 3 p.m. Eastern. That's on Wednesday. U.S. national team taking on Denmark in Aarhus, ESPN2 and Unimas. Then on Friday, you have two matches. One is the U.S. U23s facing Bosnia and Herzegovina. You will not be able to watch that match unless there's a stream that comes up that I don't know about, 11 a.m. Eastern for that one. And on that same day, Canada, they take on Guatemala at Lockhart Stadium in Fort Lauderdale. So you can follow MLSsoccer.com for all the coverage of all those matches this week. We'll get into everything that happens in the following weeks and all the other games in future editions of the show. For now, you got to look forward to the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email ExtraTime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at ExtraTime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
This is Carlos Bocanegra, Technical Director for MLS Atlanta 2017, and you're listening to ExtraTime.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life.
Back on Extra Time Radio, Simon Borg, David Goss on MLSsoccer.com, SiriusXM Channel 94. David, some things we didn't get back to, we didn't touch on yet in the MLS world. Kevin Doyle signing with the Colorado Rapids, joining them in the summer, however. They're a team that's struggling right now. They need help at forward.
Yeah.
And they're going to get it. Presumably he will provide that help, but it's in July.
But first of all, I think it's exciting that this story makes it this far in a show, and we just haven't had time to mention it because there's just so much going on with U.S. soccer and MLS right now. But he's a guy who I think is a very talented player, and he scores goals. He's not going to do as much as Robbie Keane does, which is the comparisons that you're going to hear because they're both Irish internationals. He doesn't do as much around the field, but he's a pure goal scorer. And he's good in the air, and he's physical, and he's tough to play against. And I think he's going to bring a little bit more professionalism to a lot of young players on Colorado who I think just need a little bit more polishing to be really, really good.
Who are you referring to when you say that?
I just think
Deshaun Brown is gone. So who
Deshaun Brown's
to?
Gone, but you have now Baji starting up top. You have Dylan Cerner. You have Shane O'Neill. Even they brought in Ramirez, who's 22, I believe.
Yep.
Dylan Powers isn't that old. He doesn't have that much experience. There's a lot of guys on that team. Clint Irwin, I think, is a fantastic goalkeeper, but a young guy as well.
So you want to see the same effect that we're seeing Keane have on Jussie Zardes that happened with Kevin Doyle and some of the other guys.
And I think that we've had this discussion about Mastroianni and what he's had to do, and it just helps to have another voice in there. I think like Sarvas. I think Sarvas is a big piece to that team as well, of just having more experienced players add that to the team, add that to the style. And then the question for you is, what happens to Gabby Torres now?
Well, I feel that the right piece, and in this case, hopefully for the Rapids, it's Kevin Doyle, will help Gabby Torres. I don't think he's had guys to work with that – they're the right complement for him. So I think that's why partly we've seen him struggle, because there's talent there. There's speed. There's good skill. I just think that he needs the right partner. But the segment is called The Mailbag. Is there anything in the bag that
yeah,
is
we
worth
have a good email
right now? Go ahead.
We have a great email from Forrest Clark in Englewood, Colorado. And he says he loves the show, but he loves MLS soccer, but he also loves college basketball. So when Simon wondered why listeners would give a, and then he bleeped out, damn, about Northeastern, and he apologized for even the mention of the NCAA, Forrest was offended. The sports shows he listens to regularly mention major sports, but they refuse to mention soccer. He doesn't think you need to apologize. He thinks you do need to apologize to me. He doesn't think you need to apologize,
but David,
for the listeners.
There's so many podcasts out there that touch college basketball. Why do we have to use minutes from our show to talk about college basketball?
He felt like
plus the show is on SiriusXM Channel 94. There was no college basketball talk on SiriusXM Channel.
He felt like you brought in a little bit of negativity to the show, which was unnecessary.
How much money did you waste
on that whole thing?
To go watch Northeastern?
Not that much. Not that much.
No, tell me. Over $500?
$500? No, not even close.
Not even close.
No. Below $200.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. As a fan, you get to be with the other people who care about what you care about at the moment. So it was really exciting. Speaking
there,
of
that's
fans,
all. Any other mail likes?
Well, we have a little bit of mention of a potential soccer team in Minnesota. Would you like to touch on that, Simon?
So that's everyone's really looking forward to what's going to happen on Wednesday, where we have an official advisory from the league office saying that there's an announcement that Don Garber will be making together with Dr. Bill McGuire, who's the owner of Minnesota United, the NASL team, about the future of professional soccer in Minnesota. So that's happening on Wednesday. There's a live stream of it on MLSsoccer.com at noon Eastern on Wednesday.
And it's happening
March 25th.
At Target Field, which is the home field of the Twins, who's owned by Jim Pollard, who's part of the ownership group of Dr. Bill McGuire.
So look, a lot of speculation of what's going to happen at that announcement. I think let's wait for that to play out, because when it does on Wednesday, we'll have a whole lot to talk about in the next edition of Extra Time Radio. But for now, I think we put a bow on this show. For David Goss, I am Simon Borg. Join us next time again when we'll talk Minnesota. We will talk U.S. national team, because the national team game will have been done and dusted. We'll get our first take on the U.S. trip and matches in Europe. For David Goss, I'm Simon Borg. You're listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com, SiriusXM, Channel 94.